Welcome to another episode of Point of View, a very special episode about the October referendums. I'm your host, Chandra Ligatvalli. We're covering the BUSU referendums with a series of interviews. Stay tuned later in the broadcast for a complete rebroadcast of the new student light fee debate, which was held at Council Chambers on Monday, October 21st. Campaigns began this week for four questions that are being posed to undergraduates of Brock University, with voting taking place via Brock email on October 29th, 30th, and 31st. For further background on what we cover on this broadcast, visit facebook.com/POVradio, email us at povradiobrock@gmail.com. There are four questions, and the referendum questions are in no particular order. First, removal of the $20 per credit student light fee. Second, continuation of the 85 cent per credit Student Justice Center levy. Third, the constitutional amendment. Fourth, removal of the $1.50 per credit Brock University student radio fee. The first referendum question is removal of the $20 per credit student life fee. This referendum was initiated by Goodman School of Business student Anthony Deeb, who will be joining us in the studio as the spokesperson for Yes to Remove.
Well, the reason why I've chosen to highlight these figures is because 24% is actually good. We actually regard 24% as a high number. 24% in reality is not a high number.
We invited Mr. Talal Chowdhury, who is the spokesperson for No to Remove campaign, on the program, but we did not receive a reply.
Mental health has been a rising issue among students in recent years at post-secondary institutes. To have the faintest option of reaching out to even one student in dire need of mental health support, I believe, justifies the student life fee.
We will be also rebroadcasting parts of the debate, which was broadcast live by Brock TV. The second referendum question is continuation of the 85 cent per credit Student Justice Center levy. This referendum is happening because the original Memorandum of Understanding, or MOU for short, stipulated that 3 years after the first being approved, it would return to vote. The campaign spokesperson is the current coordinator of the SJC, Brandon Vryzin, who joined us in the studio a while back, and the episode can be found on our episode archive. The third referendum question is a constitutional amendment which would increase petition from 2% to 7%, delete the Vice President of University Affairs, and other matters which will be addressed later in the broadcast. This referendum was initiated by the BUSU executive through BUSAC, who approved the Memorandum of Understanding in July. The Vice President of Finance and Administration, Christopher Yent, is the Yes campaign spokesperson.
So in essence, sustainability, accountability, transparency, and legitimacy are the four pillars of the constitutional referendum, and we fully believe that you should vote yes, because these are the things to make the student union viable long-term and accountable to the student body.
The issue of this constitutional amendment was never published in the Brock Press, and no one signed up to be the No campaign spokesperson. Due to some animosity, Mr. Yent declined an invitation to speak with me on Brock Radio for this broadcast. Nevertheless, later in the broadcast, we will rebroadcast the presentation he made from Council Chambers and provide some analysis of the as-yet unexamined elements of the constitutional amendment. To read my reporting about the constitutional amendment, visit the Brock University Gadfly website at brockbug.com. The fourth referendum question is removal of the $1.50 per credit Brock University student radio fee. Although having been approved by a narrow margin in a March 2012 referendum, Brock Radio is back up for referendum due to a petition that was distributed by BUSAC counselor Danielle Hunter. Oddly, she's not involved in the campaign. Instead, BUSAC counselor Andrew Kemble is the spokesperson for the Yes to Defund campaign. Ironically, he will be here in the studio to talk about Brock Radio and his perspective as to why it is progressive to defund Brock Radio. We will also have the program director of Brock Radio, Deborah Kartmer, into the studio to answer some of the statements that appear on the Yes to Defund campaign's display board. The student life fee is a $20 per credit levy that generates a $1.5 million fund. The monies are collected by Brock University and distributed to athletics, recreational services, and student health services. We had a conversation in the studio with the directors of these departments, Robert Hilson, Melody Schick Porter, and Karen McAllister Kenny, as well as the provost of student services, Kim Mead, came to the studio, and you can find that episode at facebook.com/POVradio. Here's a clip from that broadcast. Let's hear from athletics about the consequences of losing the fee.
So we have 8 teams that are on the docket right now that are teams that are new to Brock. They're not participating. We're in consultation with another 4 or 5 different teams. And we will just not have the resources to manage these teams. So the once homeless will be homeless again. From an athletics point of view, if we look at this from a 5-year planning perspective, we just cannot support financially and from a human resources standpoint the 630 opportunities that we're providing, and we will decrease that. The third thing, which I think is actually the most sad, is that we just had our largest win in my 2.5 years here, where we brought our community together. We had 7-year-olds high-fiving students, and we had 75-year-olds high-fiving students, and we were one community. For one night, we were one community. And you know, the students that we're bringing in through the sport management program and through some of the kinesiology programs that are actually building that community for us, we just will not be able to afford to do anymore. I find it would be, from my perspective, coming from a Western, coming from a McMaster, which is really known for its spirit. I know how to build spirit. I know we can do this at Brock. And going backwards would be pretty disheartening from all the students I've engaged. They've all told me what they want. I think we have the know-how to build it. We've had success already. And I think it would be a bit of a step backward, unfortunately.
I think also concerning mental health, I mean, we've now been able to increase the time, that increase the ability to see students in crisis right then and there, because we have a mental health nurse, and our mental health nurse is supporting the doctors and the psychiatrist and the students and being able to manage exactly all the right doors in terms of students managing all the different resources at Brock.
That was Robert Hilson, the Director of Athletics for Brock University, followed by Melody Schick Porter, the Director of Student Health Services. So there is a lot on the line with this referendum, and there was a debate between the yes side, which would defund student life fee, and the no side, which would keep it as is, took place on Monday at the Council Chambers on the 13th floor of Shimon Tower.
So, good evening to everyone watching. I hope that there's a lot of you out there. Hardest place to know where to start. Well, basically, students today face a challenge like no other before them. Every decision must be looked at carefully, whether it's about school, future, or even money. Because the decisions we make today affect tomorrow, now, more than ever. Just as students face this ever-present challenge, so must our university and our administration. But in order for students to do that, they have to be informed, and then re-informed, because that's the only way that they can make a decision that's worthwhile to serve the greater good. Complex fees that try to encompass everything have a greater chance of falling short. Which is why myself and a good number of the fellow students that I've talked to want to see that this fee is recalled for next year. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Deeb. Mr. Chaudhry, your 5-minute opening statement.
Well, thank you. We'd like to start off by thanking Adam Marshall, the Chief Returning Officer, and his efforts in hosting this debate. We'd further like to thank Anthony Deeb for being a part of this discussion. The reason we are here is to inform the student body, as Anthony mentioned, to make an informed decision on the referendum that is currently in place to revoke the student life fee. As one of the campaign leaders of No Side, we would like to inform and share information regarding the student life fee and its implementation at the beginning of this academic year. The outcome of this referendum will directly impact the student body and their opportunities at Brock University going forward. Before we start this debate, we would like to mention the values that we personally stand for, regardless of the outcome of this referendum. We believe it is important for the student to understand the transparency behind the student life fee and the core values used to implement it as a strategy, not only to improve student experience, but allow exponential avenues to cater for all dynamics and make the badge experience unique, tangible for each and every student here at Brock University. Student employment to an increase in resources for health services and a significant decrease in fees to use facilities at Brock, it's a win-win situation for the student body to become involved in every capacity they wish. This reduced fee allows students to make the badge experience their own, find their own path that enables them to become a part of their own journey at Brock University. The student life fee implemented last year has started to lay the platform that allows us as a whole to build the Badger experience together. The student body have granted many opportunities to get involved with upwards of 50 fitness classes, entry into varsity games, and a fitness membership at the cost of $20 per credit. And this refers to Yant's $20 fee. It's per credit. Collectively, we believe in a universal idea that breaks down that some have, restricting access to areas of campus that are privately funded. I'm alluding to the fact that having this fee allows us Badgers, as collectively, to use the gym, get into varsity games, participate in sports, build clubs, give students health support that is not covered through OHIP, by maintaining the integrity of the campus. All, keeping the student life fee allows individuals who cannot afford some of the services that were offered at an additional cost on top of tuition to be able to now use at their leisure without paying for it. It is the same analogy as paying for a universal bus pass. Most first-year students on campus live on residence. They rarely use the service. However, while the rest of the students living off campus use it multiple times during the day. Furthermore, there are students that drive to school and have to purchase parking passes. However, they still pay this bus pass fee that benefits the larger cause, helping all students take the advantage of local bus services. Throughout my undergraduate studies at Brock, the idea of having a 24-hour study space was unheard of. It is credit to the student life fee that certain areas in the Plaza building have been made available to students for 24-hour study space. Due to the implementation of the fee, the success rate of the 24-hour study space has been fantastic. Now, when students need to get away from and pull an overnighter, the student life fee has made it possible to escape and focus on studying on campus at any hour of the day. The one thing we would like to stress is the ability to increase mental health and wellness support. We have very strong beliefs regarding the support offered by health services to students at Brock. Through the induction of the student life fee, a full-time psychologist has been made available to students on campus that require mental health and wellness support. Mental health has been a rising issue among students in recent years at post-secondary institutes. To have the faintest option of reaching out to even one student in dire need of mental health support, I believe justifies the student life fee. In closing, we would again like to stress to the student body that the transparency of this fee is our main priority, and to maintain the integrity of educating students regarding the universal idea is at our best interest. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chaudhry. The first question will be for Mr. Deeb. In March of 2013, the student life fee was approved via a referendum of the undergraduate students of Brock University. The results of the election were 54.5% in favor of the student life fee and 45.4% against it. 24% of the student body participated in that election. Why have you chosen to highlight these figures in your campaign?
Well, the reason why I've chosen to highlight these figures is because 24% is actually good. We actually regard 24% as a high number. 24% in reality is not a high number. We are a continuously growing student body. We have, I believe, just over 18,000. If I'm not speaking out of turn. So 24% is considered high. How can we really justify making change to 100% when only, well, less than a quarter is making the decision. When the minority is making the decision for the majority. This is why I've chosen to highlight these figures specifically.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Deeb. Mr. Chaudhry, you have a 2-minute rebuttal.
That's a great point. 24% is actually making the decision for the majority. But at the end of the day, as you mentioned, we're trying to inform the student body and we're trying to get everyone to come out and vote. 54% of the 24% that voted did agree with the student life fee and what it brought to the table. And I believe we'd like more people to come out and vote and voice their opinion on what the student life fee is. And at the end of the day, I agree with Yant that going to a referendum every year or twice a year is pretty much doing students disjustice, and having a set time period for the referendum to kind of play out would be justified.
Thank you, Mr. Chaudhry. Mr. Deeb, a rebuttal?
Just to touch on the fact that we are having to go into a referendum this year. I would have much preferred to have a referendum during the year that this was voted on. It would have caused, I know that there's been concerns raised that this fee has already done some good for some people, and it is a shame that we have to consider possibly taking that help that they've gotten away. The timing of this fee initially was done at the end of the year when no such review or re-asking could be done, and I think that a fee of this magnitude, the timing has to be better. Also, the simple fact that it was done at the end of the March, which is one of the busiest times of the year, no matter how good you are at forming people, you can't really... I've spoken to second, third, fourth year students that had no idea that this happened. And it's because they're so focused on the upcoming exams that they have no time to stop in the hall. They can't get informed. Even if they would want to, there's just simply no time for it. So I think that the timing of this vote, came at a very poorly chosen time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Deeb. Mr. Chaudhry, you can have a rebuttal if you like.
Sure. I'd like to, yes, the timing of the fee, yeah. I think there's only two time periods that you can have a referendum with BUSU. I'm not sure if I'm right or wrong. There's three time periods. So I think in March was the time period that this fee was chosen to take place, and everyone at Brock University was given the opportunity to come vote. And if you feel like that students weren't able to come vote, I guess this is the time period to make a decision on if we want to keep the student life fee or get rid of it.
Thank you, Mr. Chaudhry. Mr. Deeb, rebuttal? The next question is for Mr. Chaudhry. The $20 student life fee is split three ways between athletics, rec services, and student health services. Which of these departments has seen the greatest benefit in increased services via the student life fee, and which of these three departments has benefited the least?
That's a great question. The split between the three departments is pretty much building a sense of community. The best increase, it's hard to gauge at the moment because this fee's only been placed with the academic year starting in September. It's hard to gauge. At the moment, at the zone, we've got about 1,000 to 1,200 increased participants, so there's increased volume at the zone, which in my personal opinion is good. We're getting more people to come through the facility and become active. And at the end of the day, the goal is to make students get involved at Brock University and becoming physically active at the zone, which is pretty good. The athletics has benefited a lot as well because our first home opener, Brock University men's hockey team, had a sold-out crowd at Seymour Arena. There's four busloads that went from Brock University to Seymour Arena to watch the men's hockey team play. So I guess that's a win situation for us again. We're increasing involvement of university students at these events. That's from athletics standpoint. Standpoint from mental health services is fantastic as well. We've hired a full-time psychologist on campus that's made available to students, and we've seen an increase in, there's a 54% increase in student usage. There's also a 24-hour study space that's been implemented from that mental health services. at which students are using as well. So at the end of the day, I'd say the 1,000 per visits increase at the zone is probably the greatest, and the rest will come as we progress with this referendum.
Thank you, Mr. Chaudhry. Mr. Deeb, a rebuttal?
I just wanted to touch on the increase in the participants at the zone. It's a growing concern on campus, not only amongst undergraduate students, but amongst graduate students, that this increase has severely hindered people's ability to actually get a decent workout in at the zone. I have walked past, I was hearing constantly from people that I petitioned when this whole process started, that they were forced to buy a membership outside in order to get a workout that fit with their schedule or that was at all comprehensive. The wait times for machines are extremely small. Extremely long. And although it's seen an increase, I don't think that this increase represents something that is beneficial. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Deeb. Mr. Chaudhry, 2 minute rebuttal.
I'm glad that you bring that up because all students at Brockwell, there's a lot of issue behind people thinking that the zone is very packed and you're not able to use it. The stat to date, the zone has been shut down three times, which is on average not obscene. The capacity of the zone is 140, give or take.
Could I ask you to repeat the previous point you just said?
Yes. At to date, the zone has been closed off for students three times for about a couple minutes each, and then it's been reopened. The traffic through in and out at the zone, it's hard to gauge. We're at about 140 for capacity. There's two exits to the building, so you can't really gauge at any given point how many participants are at the zone, which kind of makes it hard for us to gauge how many bodies are going through in and out. At average, there's about 80 users at the zone, which is increased from last year, but again, we still have a 60 top end, 60 users, kind of, which is still available to use at the zone at any given hour. There are peak hours and there are pretty much down hours. So in the morning, pretty much we don't hit past 60 users at the zone, which is half the capacity, which means half the machines at the zone are pretty much free to use. In the afternoon, we do get up to about 80 users at the zone, 80 to 100, which again, we're still well below the 140 capacity. It has been a growing concern. At the moment, I don't see it as much of a concern. If students have been looking for a membership outside of Brock University for that, I'd like to assure the students that there is still capacity at the zone for them to use machines at their will.
We'll be right back after these quick messages from Brock Radio. Just a reminder that later in the broadcast, we will have more information about the rest of the referendums. This is going to be the only ever 2-hour broadcast of Point of View because the issues are that complex. So stay tuned. We're going to hear the rest of the debate with the student life fee, as well as we're going to hear the presentation by Mr. Yent about the constitutional amendment. And then we're going to have interviews with the Yes to Defund Brock Radio spokesperson, Andrew Kemble, and Brock Radio's programming director, Deborah Cartmer. So stay tuned to this exciting episode.
Are you tired of cheesy mainstream cultural affairs radio program with its gratuitous nudity, slide whistle sound effects, and crash shoe phone giveaways? If so, you're tuned to the perfect frequency on your FM radio dial. The Pizza Box Cadillac Radio Hour ain't about the gimmicks and the doodahs and the fancy pants whatnots. The Pizza Box Cadillac serves up a gritty, unpretentious, keeping it real brand of cultural reportage that can only be described as authentastic. Tune in every Friday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon Eastern Time when the Pizza Box Cadillac Hour begins radiating across the airwaves live from the Welland House in beautiful downtown St. Catharines.
Welcome back to Point of View. I'm the host, Chandra Ligatfalvi. Today we're doing a special two-hour episode about the October referendums, and currently we are listening in to the debate between the Yes campaign and the No campaign for the student life fee. Representing the Yes campaign is Anthony Deeb, saying yes to deleting the $20 per credit student life fee, and representing the No campaign is Mr. Talal Chowdhury. Let's continue the debate.
The next question will be for Mr. Deeb and Mr. Chowdhury. Mr. Deeb, you'll answer first. As a student yourself, have you personally utilized any of the new services offered via the student life fee? And if so, did you feel that they were justified in their cost?
My answer to that question is yes. I have been to the zone with the express purpose to see what the level was like. I did notice that in the morning there was, I don't do an extensive workout myself personally. I was able to run on the treadmill for the period that I needed to, but that isn't the zone of, sorry, that's not the center of concern for most students. Most students are looking to get very complex workouts in. And again, we are cutting into not only it's just having being forced to buy into this, buy into a zone membership where the service offered cannot be 100% all the time, I think is a bit of an oversight.
Thank you, Mr. Deeb. Mr. Chowdhury, the same question. Would you like to hear it again?
Yes, please.
Okay. As a student yourself, have you personally utilized any of the new services offered via the student life fee? And if so, did you feel they justified the cost?
Absolutely. I've been to the zone multiple times for a workout as an advocate of healthy physical activity, healthy student living. I continuously to advise students to use the facility as well. Being able to swipe my card at the cage and walk into the zone for free this year, which is pretty awesome for me. I've been to multiple varsity sports games, which is pretty good. And if students haven't been, I'd suggest that they go. There's free baguettes that are thrown in the crowds, which is good. At the end of the day, it's the fees that have been added onto your tuition, the $20 per credit, I think justify every student the Badger experience. I feel the fact that just being able to come into a varsity sport game with a friend and experience your pretty much your athletes playing another university is an experience itself. I feel like it's an avenue for students to get involved and maybe experience what rec services, health services, and athletics has to offer. I feel like with having extra health support on campus that's not covered on by OHIP justifies every aspect of this fee, in my opinion.
Thank you, Mr. Chowdhury. Mr. D, would you like a two-minute rebuttal? Okay. Next, I'm going to invite Mr. Chowdhury to ask a question to Mr. D.
Anthony, my question to you is, why do you feel we shouldn't advocate a student involvement at Brock University through rec services? Why do you think we shouldn't advocate increased mental health support or health services for students? And why do you feel like we shouldn't allow students an avenue to engage with Brock University?
That's a great question. I've never personally said that I don't think that any of these services or these activities should be encouraged. I just think that my stance has always been that it is unfortunate that, first of all, in order to do this, students are basically forced to pay for certain things or certain services they might not feel is beneficial. simply because of the nature of this fee itself. It was passed as, I don't know if I'm saying this correctly, it's an omnibus, thank you. It was passed as an omnibus fee, which basically combines many different initiatives altogether. Why it was done this way, I'm not sure. And I think that there are a lot of students out there that would love to encourage just the things you were talking about. But there are a lot of students that want to focus on one aspect and not another. However, in this case, they were not given the choice to choose between one or the other. They were basically forced to say, if you want to support this, you have to support this. And I don't feel that that was right.
Thank you, Mr. Deeb. Mr. Chaudhry, a rebuttal to Mr. Deeb's answer.
Yes, I'm glad that you bring that up. This fee was implemented as an omnibus fee. At the end of the day, the percentage of the fee is broken down into 38% of the fee goes to rec services, 35% of the fee goes to athletics, and 27% goes to health services. To bring all three services together under one umbrella is because we're building a sense of community. The goal is to increase physical activity and increase student involvement at Brock University. There are direct links as a kinesiology student. If I can say one thing over the past 4 years I've learned is increased physical activity increases health across the page. So having the free zone membership gives students the opportunity to come to the zone and become physically active, which in turn increases or decreases their risks of developing illnesses. So the rec services fee and mental health services fee directly correlates within each other. And the other part, the athletics fee, is pretty much building a sense of spirit between students. We want students to come enjoy being at Brock. We don't want them to come here for just solely academic purposes. Coming to university should be a fun experience and an enjoyable experience that you can come and enjoy the facilities offered at the university. It should be more than just academics, and it should be, thank you for 30 seconds. It should be an enjoyable experience.
Thank you, Mr. Chaudhry. Mr. Deeb, a rebuttal?
Yes, again, touching on the zone. It was said that, you know, being able to go to the zone gives the opportunity for students to work out and gain the physical wellness that they're looking for. However, if this service continues to fall short of being able to deliver adequate workouts for students, then they're not getting that benefit.
Mr. Chaudhry, another rebuttal?
Yes. Just to add on to that, on that point, we've actually increased 50 fitness classes that have been offered at the zone for free for students, included in the fee. So these fitness classes are run by certified group instructors. In the mornings, every morning we've got a trainer with train with a trainer. Pretty much, you have a free personal training session at this, with a personal trainer, which is offered to any student that's interested to come to the zone. So we understand that there is high volume at the zone. At the same time, we've tried to alter that by adding 50 fitness classes and other avenues for students to become physically active. The pool just reopened, so there are other avenues that Rec Services is going to develop for classes for students to attend. So at the end of the day, yes, there is a high increase in volume at the zone, but there are very good tangibles and good alternates for students to get involved with fitness classes and other avenues that allow them to be physically active with certified personal training and certified group instructor training.
Thank you, Mr. Chaudhry. Mr. DeBarbeau?
Just one quick comment. The fitness classes are great, and I love to see that this extra programs have been put in place just to take some pressure off the zone. However, simply, like this fee itself, I do not believe that these fitness classes have been advertised, talked about, put out there for students to know that they actually still exist. Most of them see the zone packed, turn around and either buy a membership somewhere else, try to figure it into their schedule. If they can't, it simply falls short.
Thank you, Mr. Deeb. Mr. Chaudhry, do you have another rebuttal?
Yeah, just a quick point on that. I feel you've been done injustice if they haven't been advertised, because we've spent a lot of time advertising at the zone. I personally work at the zone myself. So there have been classes advertised inside the zone. There's a board that advertises all the classes in the zone. There's posters all over campus pretty much that justify all the classes that are offered Monday to Friday. And on top of that, there's also been, and we're open later on Saturdays till 7 p.m. So there are various initiatives that have been increased for students to kind of get involved and use the facilities at Brock University.
Thank you, Mr. Chaudhry. Mr. Deeb, do you have another rebuttal? Okay. Moving on, Mr. Deeb, you'll now have the opportunity to pose a question to Mr. Chaudhry. Sure.
Okay. I personally have seen a drastic evolution of this fee over the summer, which is understandable given its complex nature. Why couldn't this fee be broken up, allowing students more choice, and so that its money could be easily traced and its purpose be easily followed and
pursued? At this point in the debate, it seems like the microphone cuts out for about 5 seconds, and Mr. Chaudhry is cut off. Here he continues.
Initiatives? And I think we just touched over this right before by breaking down the three different sectors. Everything's built together and everything is intertwined, with increased physical activity directly impacts health services. And at the end of the day, we're trying to build a badge of spirit by increasing involvement of students to come to and experience athletics. So at the end of the day, they're all intertwined together, and it just justifies having them all linked together and work together, instead of having students just vote on separate issues.
Mr. Deeb, a 2-minute rebuttal. With that, we'll move on to closing statements. Mr. Chaudhry will go first.
Well, as I mentioned, we would like to just make sure that all the students are aware of what's going on. There is the student life fee is in place to increase student involvement with Brock University. I feel like we want to give every student an opportunity to come and visit the recreation services, health services, and use all the facilities at Brock with a blanket fee that is reduced at the at cost. I also feel like this student life fee gives every student an opportunity to build a badge experience together, and that's pretty much it.
Thank you, Mr. Chaudhry. Mr. Eve, 2 minutes for a closing statement.
I want to close first by saying thank you to a number of people. First to Talal for coming out and having this debate with me. Secondly, to our BUSU president, Cooper Miller, and the four individuals involved on the administrative council. It was Kim Mead, Karen McAllister Kenny, Melody Schick Porter, and Robert Hilson, all of which who met with me despite my stance. I thank you for talking with me and informing me so that I could pass on more of this information towards other students and possibly get them to look at a second look, whether they are in support or they're not in support. And I ask that all the people watching right now to get informed and vote, and not just to vote, but to tell your friends about it. Because ultimately, no matter what the decision about this fee goes down, we have to make sure that the most students are getting involved to find a greater good, which is why the campaign that I have started does not say to vote one way or another, but it simply encourages students to come out and vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Deeb and Mr. Chaudhry.
Thank you.
Need a break from your studies? Looking for work experience? Then why not join the CFBU volunteer crew? It's wicked fun, and you can learn about the music industry while making new friends and developing skills. So if you need a diversion or just want to have some fun, find out how you can be a Brock Radio volunteer. Visit our website at cfbu.ca. CFBU 103.7 FM, truly diverse radio.
First is the 2% to 7% quorum change for a petition. And what we wanted to make sure is that a large portion of the student body okays something to go to referendum. We pay for every election to take place. And these elections are paid for by the student body. And what we don't want is for things to go to referendum that the student body doesn't legitimately believe or doesn't legitimately want to see go to referendum. And that's why this change has been implemented.
You're listening to 103.7 FM St. Catharines. I'm your host, Sean Ligatfalvy. This is Point of View, a program that covers current affairs at Brock University. Today we're doing an extensive broadcast, much longer than our normal program, because this week is a very important week at Brock University. For anyone who's even tangentially interested in the topics of democracy, one of the referendum questions that face undergraduate students at Brock University this October is a constitutional amendment which has a package of 9 provisions that would fundamentally change some of the numbers of the Constitution of Brock University Students Union, Inc. All undergraduates of Brock University are members of BUSU as a union, and as such, they have certain rights, including the right to petition for a referendum. And if this petition reaches a certain number of signatures, known as quorum, presently set at 2% by the BUSU Constitution, then that petition is considered untouchable by the Student Council. Student Council can clarify the question put forward, but the Memorandum of Understanding, as submitted by petition, cannot be modified by Council. So keep that in mind when you listen to the proposal being made by Mr. Christopher Yent, the Vice President of Finance and Administration, as he proposes a constitutional amendment which would increase petition quorum from 2%, or about 320 people, to 7%, which is about 1,120 people, as well as there was an improvised change to quorum. So referendums require at least, currently, require at least 10% of the student population for that vote to be considered valid. The new constitution, after these amendments, would have that number be set at 14%. What's interesting about this number is it doesn't exist anywhere else among undergraduate student unions. You can read research into this that I've conducted on my website, brockbug.com, where I note that none of the other student unions in Ontario have a petition quorum above 10%, but a referendum quorum above 10%. So if you look at the numbers of the other student unions, the numbers that are being proposed in this referendum are curious. There is no other student union that has a 7% petition quorum, and there is no other student union in Ontario that has a 14% petition quorum. In fact, 14% is a very curious number indeed. And the reason that number was arrived at, we will find out later in this broadcast when we talk to Andrew Kemble, who's joining us to talk about the Brock Radio referendum, but he was also instrumental in making the number 7%, 7%. When the BUSU executive told council, here's our referendum, please approve this. The number that the executives had drafted at the executive retreat was 10%, which would be about 1,700 students. 10% of the student population would be required to sign a petition for that petition to be forced to referendum, to make end roads around council. And this proposal was presented to student council in July, and Mr. Kemble, among some other councillors, were concerned by the number 10%. Thinking it was too drastic an increase, and Mr. Kemble motioned for 5%. The reason he did this is because, and he'll tell us in his own words later, is that the referendum quorum is 10%, and it didn't make sense to have a petition quorum and a referendum quorum be the same number, because you would need twice as many people to sign the petition as you would ultimately need to vote yes to pass the levy. So when council had made a compromise between the executives and the motion by Mr. Kemble of 7%, the issue still wasn't resolved, and so what they did is multiplied 7 times 2 to arrive at 14. So now we're going to listen to a presentation that was made by Christopher Yent, the Vice President of Finance and Administration, regarding the constitutional amendment referendum. This presentation was live on Brock TV, and we are rebroadcasting it courtesy of Brock TV.
I just want to extend a brief welcome to all of the members in the council room here tonight, and especially anyone that is at home watching this debate live. Your participation makes democracy run at the university, and I thank you for that. So what I'm going to do tonight is outline the 4 pillars of the constitutional referendum and why it's critically important that you do vote yes in the upcoming election. The first pillar is accountability. So it's critically important, as we've noticed, that we want to make the student union more accountable to the student body. To do this, we found that there are members of the board of directors who are, in essence, above the student vote. And what we want to ensure is that those members are acting in full accordance with their mandate and their duties, or else they should be replaced with other individuals who will do their due diligence and see the mandate fulfilled accordingly. So that is why we have allowed for a double supermajority. So in fact, the board as well as the council will be allowed to remove a member of the board if they're not fulfilling their duty. The board makes some of the most high-level decisions that the organization makes at all. And what we want to ensure is that those individuals are doing their due diligence and representing the students effectively. We also want to make sure that the Constitution is now in line with our 2-year mandate for 2 members of the Board of Directors, in that they should serve out a full 2 years on the Student Council as well. And the way that it reads currently, it would the members that serve 2 years would only serve 1 year on council and the other year they wouldn't. And we want to make sure that those members of the board are accountable to the council as well. The next pillar is sustainability. And so in sustainability, we want to focus on executive portfolio redistribution to make sure that all members of the executive are pulling their weight fully and in accordance with our bylaws, our policies, and our procedures. To do this, we found that the internal responsibilities of the Vice President of University Affairs would better be fulfilled under the existing executives, and with the external focus coming next year under the VP of External Affairs, we want to make sure that all executives are pulling their weight and that no executive is essentially left as a part-time individual, making it so that they don't have a full mandate to fulfill, and they're also being paid a full mandate by the student dollar. And to ensure that the student dollar is most used effectively, we want to see, instead of having 5 executives at a time when the organization really can't manage that sort of size, have 4 executives with full portfolios and full mandates to see that those students that are elected to those positions strive, as well as making sure that the organization is sustainable financially in the long term. The third pillar is transparency. In transparency, what we found is we want to make sure that the committees of the council have proper mandates and can fulfill what the council gives to them. And what we found last year was that there is some debate in gray area as to whether or not a committee has a full mandate as given by the council. So to do this, we've added a clause that defines a committee more fully and allows the council to designate responsibilities off to those committees to ensure that the work that needs to be done at the committee level is done at the committee level, which will then see council function more effectively and properly for the student body. We also included the fact that any future per credit fee in their MOU should stipulate whether or not the fee is a per credit charge or whether or not it is a sum total charge, so a charge is legitimacy. And this has a couple of different tiers inside of it. So the first is the 2% to 7% quorum change for a petition. And what we wanted to make sure is that a large portion of the student body okays something to go to referendum. We pay for every election to take place, and these elections are paid for by the student body. And what we don't want is for things to go to referendum that the student body doesn't legitimately believe or doesn't legitimately want to see go to referendum. And that's why this change has been implemented. The next to that is that a petition cannot return to referendum more than once a year unless it's okayed by 2/3 of a majority in council. What this makes sure is that the student body isn't voting continuously on an issue that they've already settled and they have already put their mandate and their voice behind. We want to make sure that any referendum that goes through has the proper time to do its due diligence and see it effectively implemented before any harsh or negative criticism comes to it and allows it the proper time to fulfill its mandate and go from there. And finally, there's a 10% to 14% increase for the requirement in quorum to count in a referendum period. What we wanted to make sure is that we build ourselves a process that we start working towards the ultimate goal of making it so that we have more and more of a percentage of the student body required to vote in order to make sure that any referendum is legitimate and pass, so that in essence we don't have 10% counting for 100% of the population. We don't believe that's fair. And what we want is the 14% to act as the gateway and the stepping stone, and that in future years we will continue to increase this quorum percentage to ensure that a greater voice in the student body is heard when students vote, and to make sure that all referendums are legitimate. So in essence, sustainability, accountability, transparency, and legitimacy are the four pillars of the constitutional referendum, and we fully believe that you should vote yes, because these are the things to make the student union viable long-term and accountable to the student body. Thank you.
All right, so let's take a closer look at one of the subsections of this constitutional amendment. Let's listen again to Mr. Yent.
Is that a petition cannot return to referendum more than once a year unless it's okayed by two-thirds of a majority in council.
Wait, what?
That a petition cannot return to referendum more than once a year unless it's okayed by two-thirds of a majority in council. What this makes sure is that the student body isn't voting continuously on an issue that they've already settled and they have already put their mandate and their voice behind. We want to make sure that any referendum that goes through has the proper time to do its due diligence and see it effectively implemented before any harsh or negative criticism comes to it, and allows it the proper time to fulfill its mandate and go from there.
Given the context of the student life fee being back up for referendum only one semester after being initiated, it sounds a lot like Mr. Yent is referring to that the student life fee is up for referendum. However, when this amendment was drafted, it was drafted before the petition for the student life fee was submitted. Nevertheless, as a perception, it seems that the $20 per credit student life fee return referendum is relevant in Section H, and that perception is shared by Talal Chowdhury at the debate.
And at the end of the day, I agree with Yent that going to a referendum every year or twice a year is pretty much doing students disjustice, and having a set time period for the referendum to kind of play out would be justified.
So let's just revisit what Mr. Yent said.
Is that a petition cannot return to referendum more than once a year unless it's okayed by two-thirds of a majority in council.
In a world where the policies of this constitutional amendment was already in effect, Section G would mean petition quorum is at 7%, meaning 1,120 signatures or of about 17,000 students would be required. Due to Section K, the referendum quorum amount is 14%. Section H would mean that those students who have secured a referendum petition of at least 1,120 signatures but were defeated in referendum of at least 14%, they then went out the next semester and got 1,120 more signatures on the same question for a second time, they would then be subject to BUSAC's consent. Authority for BUSAC to be referendum gatekeeper does not currently exist in cases of referendum petitions that have a quorum of only 2%. But the installation of Section G would mean that grassroots movements would need 250% more signatures just to start a referendum. And Section H would mean that BUSAC has authority to gatekeep persistent referendums. The constitutional amendment referendum question was authored at the BUSU executive retreat, but initiated at the BUSAC retreat, a midsummer's weekend which serves as BUSAC's only contact with governance during the summer. BUSAC's authority to initiate a referendum is specified in Bylaw 675, subsection 13. Quote, BUSAC may agree to the necessity of calling a referendum at a BUSAC meeting. However, if the people want to have a referendum, they will need 7% signatures on their petition. This is a 250% increase of the needs of the petition, and no change at BUSAC about them initiating a referendum. And indeed, BUSAC called three referendums for this October. At the same meeting as initiating the constitutional amendment, BUSAC also initiated a referendum to ask students to withdraw $1 million over 5 years from the Strategic Expansion Fund to fund an artificial turf facility, but that project fell apart and the question was withdrawn by BUSU President Cooper Millard. Also, the Student Justice Center referendum was also initiated by BUSAC, prompted by the SJC's MOU expiry. Later in the broadcast, we are going to be talking with Andrew Kemble, who is the campaign spokesperson for removing the Brock Radio fee. However, Mr. Kemble also has a role in the story that we've just been covering, the constitutional amendment. Let's just switch over to an interview that we conducted with him earlier in the week. So you also have a role in another one of the stories we're following on this episode of Point of View, and that's the constitutional amendment. The BUSU executive's proposal was initially an increase of petition quorum from 2% up to 10%. You motioned for 5%, but council settled on 7%. So why did you motion for 5% instead of 10%?
So they had originally wanted 10%. At that point in time, the quorum was 10%. So what basically that was saying was you need to get 10% of the student body to sign on to your petition. Sure, a petition just means you want it to go to question, but generally when you're talking with them, you're winning them over to your side. So you would get 10% of the student body to be won over to your side. But then when voting would come, you only need 10% of the student body to vote to pass something. So why are we putting this on students of where you need to get every single student that should vote, or the bare minimum number of students who should vote to even make this legal, sign this page and say that that happens?
So in real numbers, that would be assuming 17,000 students at Brock University, 1,700 signatures would be required on the petition, but the referendum quorum is 10%, which would also be 1,700 students, except only half plus one would be required to pass that particular thing. So twice as many people would be needed to sign a petition as would be needed to vote in favor of it at the end.
Exactly. And to me, that just seems a little, one, counterintuitive. Two, what's the point of having quorum then? I mean, if I'm getting every single student who is needed to vote and I can get them to sign this petition saying we want this changed, should it not just be changed then when you've already got more students who have signed saying we want change to happen here or we right. want this to come to question, then you actually need to end up voting for you. It seems a little ridiculous. The points that were raised was we're raising it to 10% and we want to raise the number so it's harder to pass, harder to get petitions going, which means bigger barrier for having referendums. So arguably these referendums will be better thought out. Arguably these referendums will happen fewer and there won't be any kind of voter fatigue.
But is there some irony there that it was the executive who initiated two referendums this October?
Absolutely. I think there was some, there's some irony there. And I think, I mean...
But what are they responding to when they say that there's been too many referendums? Are they referring to the Brock Sexual Violence Support Center, which had three referendums in consecutive semesters?
I mean, arguably, yeah, that's what, so there, I mean, that's the most recent issue of this. I'm not the best on my BUSU history. I'm not the best on referendum history.
Right.
But looking back, that's the only recent example of this is that that referendum came to question three times last year. Do they want that to stop from happening? Do you want students to kind of think that out better? But
so the Brock Sexual Violence Support Center, which first appeared as the Women's Center, was created by a petition in 2012, in early 2012, and the referendum was canceled by the chief returning officer, Jimmy Norman, at that time in March of 2012. Then in October of 2012, the Brock Sexual Violence Support Center reintroduced itself with a petition of more than 700 people, and at that time, 11% of the population voted, and 52% voted against it. And then the very next semester, in February or March of 2013, the Brock Sexual Violence Support Center once again submitted itself to referendum, and in this case passed with about 22% of the voters participating. So that was just a little bit of background. But let me ask you about Section K of the constitutional amendment, which would increase referendum quorum from 10% to 14%. 14% would be unique and the highest referendum quorum in all of Ontario. How did this number become included in this package of amendments?
So in terms of the, so originally I had wanted to get petition number of signatures from 10% down to 5%. That didn't happen. There was the general, I initiated a straw poll to see where council would be comfortable lowering that limit to. Because there was talk of, well, let's do 9%, let's do 7%, let's do 8%. Basically guessing numbers for what are we going to lower that down to. I wanted it to be as low as possible, so I just kind of, I motioned for a straw poll so we could have hands raised. I basically counted the number of hands that went up at each point, and I figured, well, if your hand is up at 5 and hands are up at 6, chances are the 5 people will also vote for 6 because it's less than 10. The only way to get a majority was at 7. Being said, that 7% didn't solve the solution of how come we still need more signatures than you actually need people to vote for you? That answer still wasn't being questioned. So Kevin Wilson thought quickly, and he thought, well, this way both sides arguably get something out of this. By doubling the number of that you need to, on a petition, you are under the number of votes needed. So by taking that 7% and putting it to 14%, those signatures were not more than you needed votes for. So it kind of came about as a spur of the moment thing. I get that there wasn't a lot of thought put into it, but if it didn't happen then, that wouldn't be in there. So although you could say a number would be better, and we had no numbers to compare that 14% to anything else taking place at the time, I am happy that that 14% is in there. In fact, I gave him a big high five that that 14% was there, because I'd rather have quorum increase to 14% than have it be at 10%.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You are listening to Truly Diverse Radio, CFBU 103.7 FM, St. Catharines.
We're joined now by Mr. Anthony Deeb, the Yes to Defund the Student Life Fee campaign spokesperson. We extended an invitation to No Campaign spokesperson Mr. Talal Chowdhury to join us on the program, but did not receive a response. For the sake of full disclosure, it should be noted that in the original Student Life Fee referendum, I was on the No campaign. Mr. Deeb, we've just heard the debate that took place in council chambers on Monday. As you've highlighted, last year's referendum had 24% participation. In my view, it's not expected that this referendum will reach that level of involvement. If you succeed in repealing the student life fee with a lower participation than installed it, will that satisfy your qualm that the minority are making big decisions for the majority? Or does that represent an irony?
If it turns out that we do recall this fee, and we do it with less numbers that they passed it with, I'll be just as disappointed. I mean, yes, we'll have achieved what we came out to do, and I will feel that I'm representing my opinion on this whole matter, but. My biggest problem, aside from the fact that I have issues with certain initiatives that they're putting forward in this fee, my biggest issue has always been that the student voice is not being heard, informed, and they're not speaking up to tell us or to tell everyone basically what exactly it is they want. And there's a number of reasons for that. To answer your question, no, I definitely wouldn't be satisfied with, which is why I've chosen the campaign that I have, and the majority of my signage, the majority of my messages that I've been giving to students have been, I want people to come out and vote. I don't think it's a big ask ever since we've gone digital that we have had the vote online. People check their Brock emails every day. So you don't have to say something cliche like get out there and vote. You could easily say stay in and vote, because all you got to do is check your email, click on the link, and make your opinion count.
So last year in the March 2013 referendum for the student life fee, there was a significant on-campus presence for what was then the Yes campaign to install the fee. They had daily presence in Academic South, distributing water bottles and green ribbons and so forth. And despite this high-energy campaign, still only achieved 24% participation at the vote. What are the barriers that exist when it comes to... what are the barriers that exist that when it comes to actually informing people, because let's give them the benefit of the doubt that they did everything they thought they should do. What didn't happen last year that maybe ought to have?
A couple of things that didn't happen last year. The first one was the timing of the vote itself. They chose the end of the year to put this vote forward. Why exactly, I still am curious to know, but you're choosing the busiest time of the year. I mean, it's hard to say that. It's hard to say, you know, this is the busiest time of the year, because, you know, every second of every day that classes are going on at Brock is a busy day, regardless. You're never going to find a time of the year where it's not busy. But just in terms of the choice, that is probably, in my opinion at least, it is the worst time to have a vote of this magnitude with something so complicated. This fee is not something that you can just say, well, this is what we want to do. This is the one thing. We have this initiative. There it is. It's extremely, extremely complex. So that's one thing. The second thing is that it's a time where people don't want to be bothered. So even with high energy and you know, an army of people, and I think the problem was also that is that it was so high energy. We looked at, I rewatched the campaign, the debate, and Vince Tremblay, who was representing the no side at the time, his responses were being drowned out by the great number of people that were cheering on the S side. And I can appreciate the excitement behind something like this. But you have to remember again that these debates are not to make a lot of noise and get really excited. They're intended to hash out important decisions and for information to get conveyed, which is why I'm very glad that they decided to move them up to the 13th floor for this year. And hopefully that will stay going forward.
When was the first time you heard about the student life fee in March?
The first time I heard about it, I'm trying to think back now. The first time I heard about it was probably...
Had campaigning already begun the first you had heard about it?
I think campaigning had started.
And so is what you're arguing that, for example, I mean, I'll give you some facts. So... The petition that generated the student life fee referendum was distributed throughout January and achieved about 2,000 signatures. And that petition was presented to BUSAC at the end of January. So for February and March, no one in the student media or in the student union thought it would be wise to tell the public that this referendum was coming. Instead, the very first article published in the Brock Press about the student life fee was published a day after voting had already begun. Is that the kind of problem that you would identify in terms of the awareness?
Yeah, I mean, that's actually news to me. I was completely unaware that that was the case. And I mean, hearing it now, yeah, if they knew about it back then, they probably should have. At least somebody should have spoke up about it.
Well, let me play a clip for you from the director of athletics who was on our program a few weeks ago regarding this very issue.
So one of my comments about the last referendum, okay, so we should learn moving forward, was that in the constituency of student athletes and their network of people, they played scared. There are a lot of rules within BUSU that says where you can and cannot campaign, where you can and cannot even speak about the issue. So Karen and I actually even had some dialogue of, wow, we're at a university. where this is what we should be encouraging. And our student athletes, this is only one population of the three, they were afraid to speak about this anywhere except at that table. So I think that's a room to grow, because I really honestly believe, no matter what you think of, is I believe that we're here to share and debate these things.
Okay.
So you get the motion out there, you talk about it, you debate it, and then you see whether this is good for an institution or not. Mm-hmm. And I believe that if you're on the yes side, there are a lot of rules that keep you to basically controlling your exchanging your message at a table that's 6 feet by 2 feet.
That was Director of Athletics Robert Hilson commenting on the referendum process and the lack of political discourse that takes place throughout the year at Brock University. During the debate, Mr. Choudhury said that the three programs which are receiving money from the $20 per credit fee, which are athletics, recreation services, and student health services, that the three programs are, quote, intertwined. Do you buy that logic? And why does this answer not satisfy you?
Well, I mean, I'm gonna start this off, this response off, by saying that I am by no means an expert of any kind. And I know that Talal is a kinesiology major. So for me, hearing him say that, it sounds great. It sounds nice. But like I said, I'm not an expert, but for me, it just sounds like you're selling something I'm not buying. There's just something that does not sit right when I hear that. You know, we are trying, like these three things are intertwined, and there is no way possible that they can be separated. If they are, then they fall short. I've seen what happens when you try to take on many responsibilities at once. And I do understand that there are many people that are involved with this, but what happens going forward when one initiative is taking off and it is dominating the funding that it's getting from this fee, and they feel as though the other two are lacking, but they just can't afford to take away because this other one is just taking off so quickly.
So, for example, after a couple of years of this fee being in place, assuming that it continues, the athletics department, let's say, catches the ire of some individuals who want to address that issue, they would be going up against the very concept of mental health as a protection on campus. You can't criticize the athletics department, because to do so, you'd also be criticizing the mental health services.
And that's where the complex, that's where the issue lies. I mean, it's great to say that in a sentence, that these three things are intertwined, and we need these three things, all these three things together, in order to make this thing effective. From what I can see, there are already gaping holes in some of the initiatives that they're trying to pull off.
Can we zero in on a few of those?
Here's one of the, and I highlighted this issue a lot in the debate. My beef with the zone being part of what they're trying to do here. The zone is not a business in a traditional sense. It is a business, but they have no incentive to make profit. The reason why I highlight that is because if we give them a guaranteed paycheck every year, and to date, even before this fee got passed, there has been no plans to expand, aside from telling us, well, we have all these fitness programs going on, which is awesome. But at the same time, it has been known, even before the zone got built, that it had to be bigger than it actually was. So if you give them a guaranteed paycheck, it's most likely that they're just going to keep doing what they're doing because they're getting the money anyway. And they have no incentive whatsoever, because they're not a traditional business, to expand or get bigger. I mean, I found out the other day that the capacity for the zone is, in fact, 100 people. Talal, when he mentioned the 140 number, I don't know if he had all the facts beforehand, but he mentioned 140. 140 is actually the fire capacity for the zone. So, I mean, what it boils down to is that if more than 100 people get in there, they have to close down temporarily between 5 to 10 minutes to let some flow out before they can let more people back in. And with their peak hours averaging at 80 people, that's dangerously close to 100. Now, when it happens that a student comes there, and if they were one of those students that went there during the times that it closed and got turned away, the odds of them going back are pretty small. So, yes. So
why have you focused very specifically on the zone? Why is that the central element of your argument?
Is it because
it's the most problematic?
Yes.
Sorry to give you the answer.
No. It's what I'm thinking of.
Right.
But that is the reason why.
So when we look at funding athletics clubs, there's nothing really that disagreeable about that.
No, I mean, I think funding athletics clubs is awesome. I think all of these fees, like I said, another one of the issues that because I can't get off the zone that I'm failing to mention is the fact that this whole thing got passed as an omnibus. Mm-hmm. And I really feel as though it should have been a separate issue. All of them should be separate issues.
Okay.
And I think they would have, I do believe that athletics, is a big possibility that athletics would have fallen short had they not had student mental health backing it up.
We don't actually have to rely just on your gut for that information. Research was done prior to last year when the $20 per credit student life fee was introduced, asking students in a survey, would they support athletics clubs funding initiative around $8 a credit? And 35% said yes.
Again, that is what it is. The other thing I wanted to touch on about athletics is, yes, it's fine that we're, you know, if students do really want to support athletics, then I think that's a thing that should happen. Talal talked a lot about school spirit and bringing people out to athletic events. And that is fabulous for people that enjoy that. My question is, why? What if you're not one of those people? What if you're not one of those people that, A, either you don't enjoy athletics, or it's not that you don't enjoy it, but it's just not an interest of yours, or B, you are completely swamped with classes. You are so busy with classes and possibly a part-time job that you are unable to attend these. The argument coming back from that usually happens to be, well, you know, it's a subsidy for students that are interested in this. And a comparison is usually made to the bus pass, where they talk about, you know, a lot of people don't use the bus pass, but other people they're still paying into it. The difference I feel with the bus pass, because they keep using this argument over and over again, is that the majority of students use the bus. It is a minority of students that are subsidizing a majority of students. I don't feel as though it is the same with this initiative. I don't feel as though it is a majority of students. No, sorry. It is a minority of students subsidizing a majority. It is, in fact, the other way around. I do believe that the people that do enjoy going out to athletic games and involving themselves are a minority. However, I'll repeat myself that if this is something the students want, if they really feel as though they want to support athletics, fine. I have no problem with that. And all that is just coming back to the fact that I want more people to get informed, really know what this fee is all about, and vote on it, and make a decision. Which is why I started this whole process in the first place.
Is there a cookie cutter mentality being put forward by the student life fee, which is, you're lonely, to solve your loneliness, join us. And if you don't join us, that's your fault. Like, there's a quote from Mr. Chowdhury, at the end of the day, the fees that have been added to your tuition, I think, justify every student the Badger experience. Is that fair for a fee to be the gateway to social acceptance and social belonging and so forth?
No. the simple answer is no. Because just getting back to the earlier point, you can serve up this option for people and say that, here you go, this is a way to meet people, get involved, and enjoy the Badger experience. I don't think we could limit the Badger experience to just that.
So what do you hope is the lesson that Brock University, BUSU, and the student body can take away from this, win or lose?
The lesson that everyone should take away from this is, we are a very dynamic school. We are a very dynamic body of students. And we do need to get involved. We do need to raise awareness. And that, I'm trying to get my thoughts together here.
Well, let me reframe the question for you.
Okay, sure.
The way I'll reframe it is, isn't it a negative precedent to allow a fee like this to stand, considering the broken, in my view, the broken process that it was installed in? Isn't the lesson of this moment that it's not okay that a $1.5 million fee was introduced to the population with less than 10 days' notice to make a proper decision? What do you think of that perspective?
Of course. I mean, it is a dangerous precedent to put forward, and I feel as though, looking at the constitutional amendments that are being put forward at the same time that this vote is going to happen, I think that is very much in response to what happened last year. Last school year.
How so?
Simply the fact that the number of students that need to sign on for something to get passed has increased. The simple fact that it has to be stated explicitly just how much students will have to pay in order for on the ballot so that they know exactly. I mean, I spoke to one individual. There was a couple of them, but I spoke to one individual that I remember expressly that said, you know, he's voted yes last time because a friend of his told him that they should vote yes, and that's great, and had no idea and didn't realize just how much this fee was costing. So I do feel as though these constitutional changes are in part in response to how this whole process came about.
So the constitutional amendment, which we're covering on this episode of the broadcast, if it had already passed prior to your petition, you would have needed to achieve about 1,100 signatures Would you still have gone through with that?
Absolutely.
And how many days did it take to accomplish the 360 signatures you did get?
To get the 360 signatures, it took not that long, actually. I mean, I started pretty slow in the beginning, just because it was the beginning of the year and I had a lot to focus on. But to get the meat of that 360, it took me about 2 days, 2.5 maybe.
Okay. So would you say that it's perhaps a positive or a negative to increase the petition quorum from 2% to 7%?
It's hard to say. You know, I think that the number for quorum to introduce should definitely be increased. The number for a recall referendum should possibly stay the same, because I think that if you increase both, if you increase the recall, then it handicaps students the ability to be able to, if a fee does come around or an initiative does come around that is completely absurd, then I don't think that the same precedent should be in place to remove it. I know that there is a concern of constantly going back and forth on an issue. So I do agree with the fact that, you know, there can't be more than one referendum in a year. And I think that covers that issue, just to prevent the back and forth. But raising the number for quorum to recall something, I think is an unwise move, personally.
We've been talking with the Yes to Defund the Student Life Fee campaign spokesperson, Anthony Deeb. Anthony, before I let you go, did you have any other thoughts that you wanted to share with our audience?
A couple of things I wanted to highlight. The first one was, and I hate to harp on this, but it's the first one is getting back to the zone and their capacity at the zone. It's only 100 people that are able to be in there at one time before they start shutting the place down. 100 people out of, well, the last time I checked the website, it was 18,512 enrolled. That might not be full time. I'm guessing full time is around 17,000 students. That 100 represents less than 1% of the undergraduate student body, not to take into account graduate students and faculty that also have access to the zone. The zone is in desperate need of expansion. And I personally don't care how many fitness classes you introduce, that is not going to compensate for the fact that our zone is way too small. The second thing I want to highlight is that people need to start talking about this. I mean, I myself might not be able to petition everywhere on campus or off campus, but there has to be a greater discussion, which is why everyone that I talk to, I am essentially pleading with, not just to vote. It's great that you're getting their voice heard, but they need to encourage the people around them, because only they can do it. Only you can convince people that have never considered voting before to vote. If it comes from someone they care about, then they might begin to think twice. And the last point is that ultimately it's about student awareness. And I do thank the other side for having such a strong opinion to come out and make their voices heard. And I do hope that they gain, if they are truly in the majority, that they get all the representation they possibly can behind this. Like I said, if I would be extremely ecstatic if I could, you know, come to school on Friday and find out that in my wildest dreams 10,000 people voted. If that came, regardless of how it turned out, I would be extremely happy. That being said, I understand that that's a huge, it's, you know, shooting for the stars.
Well, maybe you'll land on the moon.
Hopefully I'll land on the moon. But that is definitely, I mean, it is getting people informed and letting them make an informed decision.
Thank you very much for coming in to talk with us.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Anthony Deeb, the Yes Campaign spokesperson for defunding the student life fee. You can find the Defund the Student Life Fee campaign on Facebook at facebook.com/$20 per credit.
Correct.
And that's the number 20 and the word dollar.
Correct.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Mr. Deeb, for coming in and speaking with us at Brock Radio.
Thank you.